All right, so like I said, I'm not wearing pink today. I wish that I was. So if you need any ideas for gifts for your priest in charge, you know, pink vestments would be lovely. You only get to wear them twice a year, so it's not something that most of us stock up on, unfortunately. But today is, of course, Joy Sunday, or Gaudete. It's the day that we light the pink candle and that we recognize the spirit of joy in this season. And we light this candle, of course, as a reminder of the joy that we're awaiting or expecting in the coming of Christ. But it's also a reminder of the joy that we hold on to in the midst of whatever it is that we're experiencing in our lives. And joy is one of those interesting things, right? It gets equated with happiness sometimes, but it's a lot different than happiness, I think. Happiness is an emotional state, right? And it's an emotional state that can come and go, usually based on whether things are going our way, or you know, if we're having a good day, we're generally pretty happy. Also, you can fake being happy, right? It's something that a lot of us do when we're forced to do those family pictures over and over and over and over again. Maybe I'm the only one. You can fake that smile, but you can't fake joy. You can't fake joy because joy comes from a deeper place, right? It's not just an emotion. In our listening session a couple of weeks ago, for those of you who were here, you remember that I asked everybody to share something that's bringing them joy. And it was interesting because the responses were all very similar. Every single person in that listening session said that something that was bringing them joy was something connected to their family in one way or another. And I thought about that, and I wondered, why is it that family is such a source of joy for most people? And I think it's because for most of us, being with family creates this space where we're able to be our authentic selves. We are our most true selves when we're with our families. And thus, we're able to experience true, deep joy. And so if that's the case, we might say that joy is intimately connected to authenticity. We need to experience authenticity to be able to really experience joy. Now, when I was in preschool, I went to a Lutheran preschool, and we used to sing this song. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Where? Down in my heart. Yeah, you know it. You guys know it. That's great. And there, of course, there was this other verse that was about, if the devil doesn't like it, he can sit on a tack, right? And I thought that was kind of funny, kind of brutal, kind of morbid, you know. But what I never really got was why does the devil have such a problem with joy anyway? You know, like why does it bother the devil to see people joyful? Maybe because people keep making him sit on sharp things, right? I don't know. But it's interesting because if you look beyond this kind of silly concept of the red guy in the thorns sitting on a sharp thing, and you look at the biblical concept, it actually makes more sense because in the Bible, the devil or Satan, ha-satan in Hebrew, actually is the accuser, right? That's what the word literally means in Hebrew. The one who accuses us, the one who questions our authenticity, the one who gets us to doubt our belovedness. The devil doesn't come after us by enticing us to sin, but rather by making us feel shame about who we are. And so maybe the opposite of joy isn't sadness, but shame. Now, St. Brené Brown, if you've ever read any of her stuff, she's written extensively about shame, right? And she says that shame is universal. If you don't have shame, you're probably a sociopath. But she also points out that shame is usually comes in the form of a voice, and it's a voice that's saying one of two things, sometimes both. One, you're not good enough. You're never good enough. And two, who do you think you are? And we've probably all heard these messages at some point in our lives, right? Sometimes they come from other people, and sometimes they come from our own heads. That internal form of shame can sometimes take the form of what's called imposter syndrome, right? Where you feel like you've got invited to the party and you don't really know why. And it's more common than you might think. I was surprised to find out in seminary, my second round of seminary, this most recent one, that nearly all of my colleagues, who of course were, like myself, were mid-career professionals, people who had done all sorts of amazing things and had all sorts of qualifications, almost every single one of them felt some form of imposter syndrome about being Episcopal clergy. And so it really is a universal thing, and we tend to deal with shame in a variety of different unhealthy ways, right? We might wallow in self-doubt, we might procrastinate. We might also kind of go the whole opposite way and try to totally overcompensate because we feel shame. We might try to go beyond who we're really supposed to be. It seems like the world is kind of set up to encourage shame in some ways because our systems are based on achievement at all costs. And so they build us up to this sort of sense of shame if we feel like we don't measure up. In our gospel reading today, we see John, and this week he's John the messenger. He's not John the Baptist. He's not John the baptizer. He's just John. And he's running right into that same kind of shame. He is following his sense of calling. If there's anybody that was fully their authentic selves, it was John the Baptist, right? He did not care what anybody thought. He's being his true self, and what is he running into? People are literally asking him, who do you think you are? Who are you? And notice that John doesn't try to argue with them. He doesn't try to debate with them or give reasons why he should be respected. He doesn't try to inflate his sense of self-worth to compensate for that sense of shame. He just stays true to who he knows that he's called to be. He doesn't try to make himself bigger than who he is because he understands that he has a very unique role in God's plan, even though it's not the starring role. He leans right into that vulnerable place of fully owning who he is and who he's called to be. Knowing how important that piece of God's plan that he's been entrusted with really is. And so my question for us, the church, as we're gathered in this Advent season and we're talking all kinds of stuff about paying attention to how God is calling us, to how God is showing up in our lives, I have to wonder, what would it look like every single one of us in this room right now? What if we could all fully own who we are, who we're called to be? And as a church, as a community, as a collective body here at Holy Cross, what if we looked around and we didn't try to look around and see what isn't here, and didn't try to feel a sense of shame that we're not bigger than we are, that we don't have more resources than we think we need to have? But what if we fully embraced our identity of who we are right now and the joy of this authentic community that God has called us to be in this very moment? I believe that the power of a small group of people where every single person's gifts are not just recognized, but empowered, would be so much greater, so much more powerful than a big organization where people are always striving to be something else, always trying to look better than what they really are. During this last week, we had the feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It was on the 12th. And part of the traditional celebration of that feast is the retelling of the story of Juan Diego, the indigenous peasant who had the vision of the Virgin that brought life and hope to so many people. And in the story, the Virgin tells Juan Diego that even though he's experiencing this shame and doubt at being this peasant who's been given this incredible vision and then called to take it to the people and to confront bishops and to confront the powers that be, he's experiencing shame, and yet she says to him, "I have many servants and messengers whom I can send to do my bidding, yet I choose you. I choose you." Perhaps we can hear that same word to us today. On this day that we're seeking joy and we're celebrating the ministry of the messengers, the people who are called to move through their shame into authenticity, the people who are called to prepare the way for the healing power of Jesus that's even right now coming into the world. And so I pray that we could find the joy that can only come from being who we are truly called to be. All of us as individuals and all of us as God's gathered people in this community right here and now. And I pray this with you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.